This episode is about decisions under pressure, clarity without consensus, and what leadership actually costs when the industry's down, expectations are high, and people are watching. Joining me today is Jamie Donnelly, CEO of Integrity Staffing Solutions, one of the largest staffing firms in North America and a company known for putting people first in an industry under constant pressure. Jamie has spent more than 25 years inside Integrity, working across operations, sales, HR, finance, before stepping into the CEO role. She didn't arrive at the top overnight. She earned it by seeing the business from every angle. And what makes Jamie's story especially relevant is when she took on the role, the industry was facing disruption, a major client had pulled work in-house, and the easy move would have been to wait. Instead, Jamie made difficult decisions, some of them unpopular, and had to lead through moments of real uncertainty. My firm, CEO Coaching International, has worked with Integrity for almost 10 years and has seen firsthand how Jamie leads with resilience, clarity, and a willingness to make hard calls while navigating a founder-led business and breaking barriers as a woman CEO. Today's conversation is about what leadership really looks like when agreement isn't guaranteed, the pressure is real, and the decisions matter. I'm excited for you to hear Jamie's perspective. Jamie, welcome to the Make Big Happen podcast.
Thank you for having me, Mark.
Well, let's jump right in. So, you stepped into leadership right after Integrity lost its biggest client, pulled the business in-house. What did you tell yourself in that moment that kept you moving forward?
It was absolutely a difficult time for the organization, both for the company and personally. It was hard for us. One of our largest clients for so many years had decided to do what we were doing for them internally. We were able to keep a small portion of the business, but the business changed drastically for us as an organization. And that was significant because we had spent 25 years with this client, building up a culture within our organization to support them in such a significant way. So when that change happened, we really had to take a step back and reflect. What does this mean to the company? What does this mean to our people? What does this mean to our future? And that reflection, we didn't have a lot of time to do it, right? So we really had to work quickly, swiftly, and make decisions fast and decisively so that we could move forward as an organization.
So approximately what percentage of your business was that when that happened?
It was too much. It was the amount where you would say as a leader, this is dangerous for us. We have to figure this out. And really, we took a step back and said, okay, how do we protect the bottom line? Right. So the revenue's changing, the profit's changing, but how can we protect as much of it as possible? So we had to go deep and find efficiencies within how we were servicing not only that client, but the rest of our clients, how we were operating our back office, our payroll, our billing, our, you know, HR functions, how to support the business in a new and more efficient way so that we could protect the bottom line and keep as many people employed as possible.
So speaking of today and the workforce today, what would you say the biggest misunderstood challenges in today's workforce from your perspective?
Oh my goodness. I think there's a trust issue. If I really had to dig deep into this, there's a trust issue. And that comes from a lack of transparency from the top. And it is something that I focus on so deeply with our team, our leadership team, and the entire organization, which is be as transparent as possible with your team. There's a lot of mistrust that comes from, you know, entry-level workers, our field staff, when they feel like they're not getting all of the information, especially when you're in a time of change, right? So when you have something so drastic happen to the organization, there's a lot of fear that comes from that. And it's not just fear at, you know, at the field level, it's fear all the way up to the top at the leadership level. What does this mean for me? It automatically goes to that, right? And so when you can be as transparent and lead with transparency, you rebuild that trust within your team, and that helps everybody move forward. And when you can be transparent, even if it means things are changing and this might impact your role, or things are changing, but you're an A player and I need you here on this team, right? Both of those conversations are super important. If you can be transparent and you build that trust within your organization, it will change everything. It will change the culture of how everyone operates.
I love the way you communicate and lead with transparency. I want to go back to losing this huge customer. And so when you got the news that you're losing it, you're new in the CEO role, and now you got to communicate this in the organization. How did you do it? And I imagine you had to be nervous communicating that.
It's definitely nerve-wracking to communicate because this is people's livelihoods, right? When somebody's livelihood is impacted, it's going to be difficult. But when you can take a step back and lead with transparency and lead with clarity, that is what really was helpful for everyone. Mark, I was scared. It was a scary moment for the organization, and it was scary personally. But when you can make the decisions and you can move forward and get everybody marching in the right direction, marching in the same direction, locked arms, that really is what makes a difference for the organization. And that's what helped us through. And I will tell you, there was disagreement. There was not, this is a silver bullet way to power through this. There's no perfect answer for how to deal with a transformation like that. But there is a way to get your team together, right? To bring them together so that we're all getting on the same page and you lead with agreement is optional, but commitment is not. You hear it all out. You air it all out. You talk about all of the things that all the ideas, all of the challenges that your team has, and you digest them as a leader, you digest them as a leadership team, and then you come to one conclusion, ultimately, and you lock arms and you march forward with that one conclusion.
Speaking of transformation, let's move to AI. Mm-hmm. Do you see AI and the automation as the biggest threat for firms like Integrity? Or do you see it as the biggest opportunity?
So it's both. Anyone who doesn't say that it's both is lying to themselves, right? So what I will say is we are an early adopter of AI, AI technology in recruiting. We implemented voice recruiting, AI voice recruiting 3 years ago, way before our competitors did, because we saw what was coming. Additionally, we knew we needed efficiencies within the organization. Thousands of applicants coming into our database on a daily basis. Thousands of applicants coming into our database. We did not have the manpower to deal with that, right? To contact all of those candidates and to get them screened and to make the placements fast. When we could deploy AI to do that for us, it was game changing for our organization. And we saw that and took that and spun it into different areas within the organization. So we have been an early adopter. I absolutely believe that it will change the face of recruiting. It's already starting to, but it will also change it for us as the recruiting agent, right? So it makes it easier for our clients to go recruit. It makes it easier for them to scan through and screen through their applications as well. It is disruptive to the industry. And if we can continue to find ways to be relevant with what I call the head and the heart work instead of the hands work, it's then that we'll be of the best service and value to our clients.
Terrific. Well said. So you had an unusual path rising from recruiter to CEO. Firstly, who spends 25 years at a company these days?
No.
And you went from what we'll call near the bottom of the organization as a recruiter to the top of the organization. What personal shift did you have to make going from managing financial risk to taking the big bets for the firm as its visionary?
So it was really easy to be fearless in the beginning of my career. There was nothing to lose at an entry-level position, right? So sitting as a recruiter or a recruiting leader within one specific client, it was easy for me to make big bets and be fearless. That fearlessness at that young age is what sparked the interest of the founders of the organization in my participation in the organization. It was how we adopted that fearlessness and applied it to different facets and parts of the organization. They really just opened up the door for me to move throughout the organization and take that fearlessness and try new things, build new programs, implement new technologies. And I will tell you, as I got closer to the top, it was harder to take those big bets. It gets harder because, you know, the stakes are significantly different. And as I walked through my C-level career as the organization, my first C-level role was the chief risk officer. So my job was to say no. It was to protect the business at all costs, right? So that was definitely, it set me up for a little bit of challenge as I progressed to the CFO. And then ultimately here in the CEO role, I had to go back and tap into that fearlessness that I had as a young woman rising up throughout the organization and placing those big bets with certainty. What I will tell you is I've also learned that it's not always going to be right. I'm not always going to make the right bet, and that's okay. It's what I do with that learning. It's what I do with the knowledge and what happens after I make the wrong bet that the magic really happens as a leader. And not only for me, but for my teammates, for my, you know, my peers, my colleagues within the organization, my team, what they learn from it as well and how it helps us iterate and evolve as an organization is really tremendous. So can't be afraid of making those big bets.
So just for perspective, when you joined the firm, how many employees worked in the company then? And give us a scope of the size of the firm today in terms of headcount today.
Sure. When I started within the organization, I would say we were about $15 million in revenue, right? And now we're probably closer to 175. We've had times during the organization's trajectory where we've employed, you know, 1,000 temporary employees. Right now we employ, you know, 5,000 to 6,000 temporary employees in any given week. There have been moments within the organization where we've employed 50,000 temporary employees within the week. And it depends on the client influx and, you know, the client needs and demands. So we've really had a roller coaster ride over the years in terms of the scale and scope of the organization. And it's been an interesting journey to be able to create an organization that can flex up and flex down with client needs depending on the economic factors.
And that's why the temporary nature that you're describing, which enables that flux mm-hmm. up and down, that's challenging. Correct.
It definitely is challenging. So, you know, a portion of our business is temporary staffing, right? Where we're placing temporary associates in a client's facility for a short period of time or even an indefinite period of time. Large on-site client accounts are our specialty. They're our bread and butter. So when a client comes to us and says, I need 500 or 1,000 people in this building and I need that in 6 weeks. We got that, right? That's where we really shine as an organization. We have smaller clients where we're placing 1 to 5 employees as well. And that's great because we get to give that boutique service and they get all of the benefits of the efficiencies that we've built for the high volume staffing. But another facet of the organization is what we call recruitment process outsourcing, where we don't actually employ the placements, but we do all of the recruiting and all of the work up until day one, onboarding the staff member for the client, and we do that at a high volume. And we do 50 to 60,000 placements a year in that capacity as well.
Incredible. What's the moment you most doubted yourself as a leader, and how did you overcome it?
So in 2023, the staffing industry went in a sharp decline. It was the end of 2022, beginning of 2023, and it happened so fast. And the entire industry just kind of plummeted. Average decline and contraction for commercial staffing, which is what we do, was anywhere from 20 to 25% in that year across the industry. We were not isolated. Like we that hit us. It hit us hard. And it was like the middle towards, you know, Q3 where of 2022, where I said, no, we cannot do this again. We cannot have another year where we lose another 20% of our volume. And the industry was on track to have another decimating year in 2023. The industry contracted another 18 to 20% in 2023. We squeaked out at an 11% contraction in 2023, right? So we shaved it off. And in 2024, we were able to stay flat. And in 2025, we grew over 60% for the year when our industry and our competitors contracted 2% for the year. So industry, 2% contraction. Integrity grew 60%. I tell you that story because it was the decision that we had to make about what to do to not be like the rest of the industry in the early stages of that contraction. And that was to revamp our entire sales process. And it was like scrapping it down to bare bones. We went down to even the candidate profile, how we were interviewing, what techniques we were using for our interviews, what screens we would use. You know, we're so fortunate to use the Talent Insights from CEO Coaching International. That is such an amazing tool for us, for all of our candidates, but really deeply understanding that as an organization and what we were looking for and using that as a tool in the hiring process, our onboarding process, implementing AI within our sales process, not only within our actual sales process and our marketing process, but within our sales training, revamping the entire sales training and onboarding. And we really dug in and said, we have to make this investment in a new sales team, turned over 75% of our sales team, turned it over, rebuilt it. And this is why we were able to grow over 60% in 2025 and the rest of the industry contracted. It was scary making that decision. We did not have a unanimous decision within our leadership team to do it, but we had to make the decision and do it.
So what is, I find this fascinating about you. So you got these owners out there.
Oh yeah.
Two of them.
Love them.
And here you're making a really aggressive change in how they've been operating for a long time. What gave you the courage to do that? And were they aligned with you?
They were aligned with me. Here's what the role that I play as CEO is CEO, even though there are still two founders and owners within the organization. And what I will say is that we had a nice ramp. I've been with the organization for 25 years. We know each other well. There's a level of trust that comes with a relationship that's that long. However, they are still putting their baby in my hands, right? And there's something to be said for them allowing me and giving me the grace and the space and the autonomy to make the decisions that I need to make. I don't ask for permission to make decisions as a CEO. That would cripple me with a founder who I needed to go make every decision with. What I do on big decisions is we have a framework that we operate within a certain dollar amount. If I'm making a decision within a certain dollar amount, it's going to change the trajectory of the organization's profitability in a certain, you know, realm. We have a conversation. I explain it. I explain my decision. And then I ask for feedback. I ask for, what haven't I thought about? What would you do? Is there anything you could poke a hole in? What do you like about this? What do you not like about this? And that feedback that I get from the founders is really amazing because it is a different perspective, right? And then ultimately, I take that feedback, I digest it just like I would from anyone else on my team, and I move forward with a decision. Most times, it's the same decision. Sometimes, it's the same decision with a little bit of tweak. it's not often where I pivot because of the feedback that I've gotten from the founder. And actually, I can't think of a single instance in the past couple of years where that's been the case. I am given the trust to make the decisions that I need.
How often do you communicate with them or have a check-in with the founders?
So Todd, who was the former CEO, I talk to him on average for an hour every 2 to 3 weeks. That's about it. And we have a scheduled call and we get on the call. Now, of course, you know, there's texting and there's personal chat that happens between us quite often, right? Because we've been in each other's lives for 25 years. But a formal sit down where I'm talking about the state of the business and giving him an update and, you know, allowing him to ask questions and kind of poke into what we're doing. That's every 3 weeks on it. We try to do it every 2 weeks, but it really doesn't happen. It's every 3 weeks.
So what advice would you give a founder that's bringing in a world-class CEO like you? What advice would you give them? Because it, like you said earlier, it's their baby and they're going to be nervous. And the way they did it might not be the way you did it, but they can't cut your legs off or they're undermining you. Especially, I've seen it happen often when people will go around the new CEO to the founders and that just doesn't work. It minimizes your authority.
It does. The one thing I'm super grateful for is Todd will never diminish or minimize my authority. I do the same for my team. So it's this one question. When someone who's maybe two levels down comes to me directly with a question or a concern, I do have an open door policy. We've had an open door policy at our organization for, you know, the 25 plus years I've worked here. I love that about the organization. I want people to freely feel free to come talk to me. The one question I ask is, what did your manager's name say when you talked to him or her about that? It's the very first question. And usually the response is, oh, I didn't talk to them about it. Okay, I want you to have that conversation with them. Do you want to role practice it? And I'll role practice the conversation with them if they want to. And then I said, okay, let's get a commitment. When are you going to go talk to them about that? Come back to me within 24 hours after that conversation and let me know how it went. Now, what I will do as well is I'll go to that leader and I'll say, somebody's going to come to you and have a conversation. I need you to be open. I need you to be listening. I need you to be a good truth receiver, right? And hear what's happening. And then I want you to follow up with me when that conversation's finished. Todd, thankfully, doesn't have to do a lot of that, right? It's very infrequent where somebody will go talk to him. What they do talk to Todd about now is when they get excited about a win. He has opened the door so that when there's a good win, especially for our sales team, they're picking up the phone, they're calling their leader, they're calling me, they're calling Todd, they're sharing their wins because that's exciting and it's great when you can have a senior level executive celebrate your win with you. And he's always open to that. And so am I.
So let me go back to what advice would you give that?
Oh, that's right.
That's all right. I loved your answer, but this is something that many founders reflect on and they get it wrong. I've made that mistake too. And it's hard.
Here's what I will say. It's not going to be perfect, but what helped Todd and I drastically is that framework. Here's the framework. Here's the autonomy you have. Right? Building that framework out and agreeing to it is crucial because I know what I need to work within. And when I need to work outside of that framework, when I need to step outside of that, then I'm going to give a call and I'm going to have a conversation, right? And it's only within that framework that I feel comfortable not picking up the phone and making that call. That framework's pretty broad for a CEO. Right? You've got to set that frame pretty big. It can't be, you know, every $10,000 decision I'm calling Todd to talk about, right? And that's just for my organization based upon the size of my organization. But you have to make that framework and put it in place and agree with it. What I will say is Todd doesn't always agree with the path I'm going to take to get to the outcome. 99% of the time, he's agreeing on the outcome. And he's trusting me as the leader he hired and put in the seat to take the team down the path to achieve that outcome. And as long as I have a repeated track record of delivering those outcomes, he leaves me alone.
So you said earlier that integrity operates by the clear principle of agreement is optional, commitment is not. How did that show up when the pressure was the highest?
When pressure is on, as leaders, we naturally want our way to be the way because you can have control. There has to be some flex. I think of it as kind of like, you know, a very old rigid tree branch, right? If you just pull on it a little bit, it's going to snap, right? When you've got a little bit of a younger tree, you can bend it a little and it's not going to break. That softness, that flexibility is what we need to have as leaders in those moments. Because if you just draw the line and it's your way or the highway, you're not inspiring followership. You're not inspiring people to be honest and truthful with you about their observations and their feedback and their ideas. You will create a team of yes when you don't want a team of people who say yes to you all the time as a leader, right? So I think that being open to changing my opinion, to changing my thought process, to changing my decision, and having a track record of doing just that with my team when I get information that is helpful and is useful, that helps significantly along the way.
Integrity is a people-first company. What decision, truly, can you honestly say you put people ahead of profits? And how did that ultimately pay off?
Okay, so when it says pay off in terms of like bottom line, it doesn't. Like it pays off in terms of putting your head down on the pillow at night as a leader and creating a culture where your team can do the same, right? So we have this project here at Integrity called Project Home, where we teach our team to recognize the signs of homelessness for our candidates, for our associates. And when they see an associate who's struggling, when they see a candidate who's struggling, who maybe, and this is a real example, is sleeping in their car, right? They are empowered to escalate that to our Project Home team, who picks it up, works confidentially with that associate, and makes sure that they have what they need to be successful. That might be putting a down payment on an apartment and getting them their first and their last month and getting them settled into a new home. That might be, you know, 3 weeks of transition housing. That might be paying their electricity bill so the lights stay on. That might be paying their back due daycare so that they can continue to go to work because they need to be able to have their kids in daycare, right? So recognizing those signs and doing those things to make sure that the community that we're employing and we're supporting is feeling supported and successful, that's what we do. And again, it doesn't show up in profits. That is absolutely just its cost. But it matters to our team. It matters to our associates. It matters to loyalty. Our staff feel empowered and they want to stay with us because we make a difference for people in the most basic human way. And that's really important.
Let me change directions. So coaching has been a big part of Integrity's story and your story too.
Yes.
What's been the most meaningful impact coaching has had on you personally?
Personally? Okay. So my coaching journey started, you know, almost 10 years ago, which is a year after Todd's journey started. And he was so fortunate to have an amazing coach, Sheldon. And Sheldon came and facilitated a workshop, a quarterly meeting for our organization. And it was my first opportunity to interact with Sheldon. Sheldon saw a spark within me. And he said to Todd, let me coach her, let me help you develop her. And it was like I was a kid in a candy store with all of the candy that Sheldon was giving me. It was pull after tool to fill my toolbox as a leader, not only from a leadership perspective, but from a decision-making perspective and a strategy perspective. He was giving me useful, practical tools that I could deploy immediately within the organization, and that my team could then deploy immediately within the organization. So as I got those tools, I started using them and teaching my team them. And this was fabulous because it just trickled down with that within the organization. Now, naturally, other people started coaching with CEO Coaching International within the organization because we saw the benefits and this was amazing. But one of the unanticipated benefits that I saw on the personal side was what it did for my daughters. I have three daughters. My oldest is 23, and then I have twins that are 21. And I see them use the tools that I've been using for years as they embark upon difficult, people navigation within their young adult lives in college, navigating with professors, navigating difficult situations with roommates, their early jobs, navigating, being able to communicate up, influence without authority, right? All of the things that they're learning to do because I've gotten these tools and I've been able to share them with them. Another big one, and I'll share this with you, was I was at a particularly rough time in my personal life where my marriage just wasn't going the best. It was struggling. And Sheldon and I had a call and he said to me, "Jamie, I have to tell you something." And I said, "What?" He said, "You're not a rock star right now." And I was like, "Wait, what? What's wrong? What are you talking about? What do you mean I'm not a rock star?" He's like, "Your rock star vibe is off. You're not executing well. Like, there's something going on. What's happening?" And I confided in him what was happening for me in my personal life. And Sheldon gave me the greatest piece of advice that I've applied in my personal life. And it was, if you make the decision to get a divorce, create a shared vision. Said, create a shared vision with your ex-husband. What do you guys want this to look like when you come out on the other side of this divorce? What do you want your relationship to look like? What do you want it to look like for you and your kids? And use that shared vision as a filter for all of the decisions that you're making. And I feel like my ex and I could write a book about how to have an amazing separation and a healthy, divorce. We still co-parent our young 20s, daughters together. Just went to dinner together for our daughter's 23rd birthday last week. We have a great relationship because of that advice. That personal advice I've taken and I've used for so many difficult decisions that we've had to make as an organization when change disrupts us. What is the vision that we have for the end state? And let's make all of our decisions through that filter for that end state. And if it doesn't align with that end state, we need to kick it out. We need to not think about it. We need to move on. And that really has helped us as an organization as well. But on the personal side, it really changed my life.
You, when I had the privilege of interviewing you at the C200 conference, I think it was back in October, you said something. It was the one thing that struck me the most that I'll always remember about this shared vision about a future wedding. If you don't mind sharing that.
I don't mind sharing our vision, and I didn't share that. But yes, our shared vision was that we would dance together. We'd have a relationship that's strong enough where we could dance together at our daughter's weddings, right? And so every decision we made was made through that filter. And, it's not easy, right? It's definitely was not an easy personal thing to go through. It was very difficult. But when you have that, North Star that you're trying to get to, it really does make the decision making more simple, right? You can kick out all of the bad emotional driven, decisions and really focus on that outcome. And again, Mark, it was a personal piece of coaching that Sheldon gave me in a business coaching call. It was a personal piece of advice he gave me, and I have been able to use that dozens and dozens of times over the years.
I got to tell you, I've used that when you shared that, I've used that with others, that shared vision down the road. Amazing. And for those listening to this, Sheldon Harris, he's a rock star. And I used to be his coach years ago when he was a CEO of Complete Nutrition. And today he coaches me as the chairman and also coaches our CEO, Randy Dewey. So I understand what you're feeling. And this really resonates with me going through what I'm trying to hear what you're saying and think about, am I being a good chairman for Randy in the same way your founders are being good chairman to you? So thank you.
Thank you. I will say, you know, coaching with Sheldon has been one of the highlights of my career. It really has been. He's been such a great coach, such a great mentor, and a beautiful friend. It's really a great relationship that we've developed over the years. And anybody who coaches with him is very lucky. But you have a team of amazing coaches. What I do like is that there's depth within the team for the different resources, right? So as we've had different needs in the organization over the years, being able to tap different coaches who have expertise in different areas like sales or marketing has been really important for the organization and has helped us grow in ways that we wouldn't have otherwise grown. So thank you, Mark.
Well, thanks for saying that. So tell me, before we move on to a big topic, let me ask you about who are your ideal customers today or clients today?
Ideal customers or clients are, we typically service light industrial, so retail, warehouse, manufacturing, distribution clients across the United States. So when you need a warehouse worker or a manufacturer worker, that's our bread and butter. We do also service call center clients, clerical clients, some finance. But primarily it's when, you know, a new warehouse is getting set up and you need 40 or 50 new associates, you know, in your building. That is something we can do when you have a project or a new line coming into a building. It is something that we ideally go into. Ideal clients, though, have to also meet some criteria around how they treat our people, right? So it has to be a safe work environment. It has to be a positive work environment. They have to have great leadership. Without those things, it's not an ideal client. We have walked away from clients before where it's great volume and it's great revenue, but our associate base is not happy because it's not a great environment for them to work in. We come out of that client. We part ways at that point.
So let me move on to this big topic. In rooms still dominated by men, what perspective do women leaders bring that CEOs can't afford to overlook?
I think that's changing in today's day and age, quite honestly, Mark. I think having more women in leadership roles, you know, we talked about this at C200 a little bit. You asked a question and somebody from the audience yelled in and said, would you ask a man that question? And we were like, okay, let's move on. You know, when
I... yeah, I think I said, okay, I'm ready to talk about your divorce now.
I would say, you know, we definitely have a different perspective, right, in the organizations that we've grown up in or in our career trajectory because we face different challenges than our male counterparts have. But what I would say is that I have been very fortunate to work within an organization where women have been championed, have been pushed into leadership positions, elevated into leadership positions, just as much, if not more, than our male counterparts have. My industry is male dominated. It absolutely is. I would say that the perspective we have and the challenges that we've faced as women bring to the table a different set of decision-making skills than our male counterparts might have because we've had to navigate things in different ways than some of our male counterparts have. But I will say I am super hopeful because I know that I face less of those challenges in my career than some of my female colleagues have. And I know that my daughters certainly will face significantly less challenges than I have because we are making progress as a country.
And you're a great role model for those daughters, for sure. So have you ever been underestimated because you were a woman? And if so, how'd you use it to your advantage?
No, you've asked me this question before, Mark. And no, I've not been underestimated as a woman before. And I feel very fortunate to not have been underestimated. But I've been championed as a woman. So when I was in rooms, in boardrooms, in decision-making meetings with people who would look to Todd for the decision, Todd would often say, I don't know why you're looking at me. You need to ask that question to Jamie. You need to be looking at Jamie. He would redirect. And that reinforcement was always amazing for me. And it gave me the confidence that I needed to really lead a discussion, lead a decision, and lead a room.
So what bold risk are you personally taking right now?
Oh, why was I not prepared for that question? I knew it. You know, that's a question I should have been prepared that you were asking, because what I've learned in my coaching over the years is to be always look for that bold risk that is going to move us forward as an organization. Right now, a lot of that is on AI as an organization. How do we take the hands work away from our employees so that that hands work is being done by the machines, is being done by the AI, or being done by the outsourcing until the AI can catch up and do it? And our core team can focus on that head and heart work, the thinking, the strategy, the relationship building. How can we think very boldly about lifting huge chunks of that out of the organization and moving it to the AI so our teams can build better relationships? They can think more strategically about our services. They can deliver better to our clients, and they can do more, right? They can do more of the important stuff, not more of the mindless stuff. Let the robots do. Let the AI do.
So where do you see Integrity 5 years from now?
Oh, gosh, definitely, you know, 3 times the revenue where we are. That's the goal. We definitely want to triple our revenue, which is an uphill battle because the industry is still facing another contraction year. I will not have another contraction year. I will have another growth year. And, you know, how we do that as an organization is up for play, right? It's up for strategic thought and vision and discussion, not just from me, but from our entire team, right? So we're about to go into our annual leadership meeting. And one of the sessions, it's 2 sessions that I'm super excited about, is our divergent, convergent thinking. And it's real big, right? So we're about $170, $75 million. I want another $50 million on the board this year of revenue. How are we going to do that in 1 year, right? And that divergent, convergent thinking exercise that we learned through CEO CI, we're bringing to our entire team, and we're going to be thinking big as a leadership team to push us forward into the next year. And that tool, that one technique has made a significant difference in how we operate as an organization.
Will you still be the CEO 5 years from now?
Oh, gosh. Yes, I hope so. I really do. If the organization is on the trajectory that it's on, I do believe that. You know, would I love to be a chair, right, of the board and do that eventually? Yes. But what I will say is I'm still really young, Mark. I got a runway, right? And I believe in what this organization does. Nobody stays at a company for 25 years. Anymore. You said it at the beginning of this call. You do it because you believe in what you're doing. There is a passion and a purpose behind what you're doing. And what we're doing is giving people meaningful work. We're giving them opportunities they wouldn't otherwise have if our organization wasn't thriving and growing. And as long as I can continue to be the one who's helping the organization thrive and grow and give people that opportunity, it's going to give me purpose. So yeah.
You are very inspiring. So if you could leave women listening to this episode or any CEO facing pressure with one leadership lesson that's defined your career, what would it be?
Shorten the time between clarity and action. I am not perfect at this. I still struggle with it, but I get better every single day. When you have clarity on what needs to be done, you have clarity on a decision, you have clarity on a problem that needs to be solved even, shortening the time between that clarity and taking the action you need to deliver the right outcome is imperative as a leader. The longer you draw that out, the longer you hem and haw, the more painful it is for not only you, but for your entire team, your entire organization. So if you can take the time, shorten that window, get clear, make a decision and action it, it will change the trajectory of your organization as well.
Jamie, you truly are amazing. And
thank
you so much for coming on the Make Big Happen podcast and share your big story, your big journey. I wish you all the success in the world to continue leading Integrity Staffing for many, many years and making a difference in people's lives. You truly are living the dream and impacting the dreams of others.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you for all of your help over the years as well.
By the way, I love all your Sheldonisms too. It's like sometimes I feel like I'm talking to Sheldon here.
You must have done
7 or 8 of them on this episode, and I loved them. They made me smile.
I'm glad. Well, they've really helped me not only in my professional life, but my personal life. And like I said, they've helped my kids. They've helped my girls.
Well, all the best to you. All the best to all of those 60-some thousand people at Integrity Staffing,
and all
the best to your daughters as well.
Thank you so much, Mark. I appreciate it.
Thank you. There are 3 kinds of people: those who make big happen, those who let things happen, and those who ask what happened. Don't just listen to these stories. Decide who you're going to be. Show notes and resources are available at CEOcoachinginternational.com. Subscribe so you don't miss what's next. At some point, every leader faces a choice: play it safe or go big. If you're ready to make big happen, visit CEOcoachinginternational.com and learn how our been there, done that CEO coaches can help you make big happen.